"You may leave your lantern. You will have no need for it," the clerk stated. Royce nodded, but kept the lantern nevertheless. As they stepped through the doorway, Hadrian heard a sound like singing, a faint, mournful sound, as of a thousand voices joined in a somber dirge. The sad, oppressive music brought to mind the worst memories of his life, and filled him with a misery so great it sapped his resolve. His feet felt weighted, his soul chilled. Moving forward became an effort. Once the party crossed the threshold, the great doors began to close, shutting with a thundering boom. The chamber was well lit, although the source of the light was not apparent. It was impossible to judge the height or depth of the chasm. Both stretched into seeming emptiness.
"Are other prisons like this?"
Myron asked, his voice quavering as they began to inch their way across the bridge. "I would venture to guess this is unique," Ulrich replied. "Trust me, I know prisons," Royce told them. "This is unique." The party fell into silence during the crossing. Hadrian was in the rear, concentrating on the placement of his feet. Partway across, he paused and glanced up briefly to check on the others. Myron was holding his arms out at his sides, like a tightrope walker. Ulrich, half-crouching, reached out with his hands as if he might resort to crawling at any minute. Royce, however, strode casually forward with his head tilted up, and he frequently turned from side to side to study their surroundings. Despite its appearance, the bridge was solid. They successfully crossed it to a small arched opening into the Black Tower. Once off the bridge, Royce turned to face Ulrich. "You were fairly free about revealing your identity back there, Your Majesty," he said, reproaching the monarch. "I don't recall discussing a plan where you walk in and blurt out, 'Hey, I'm the new king, come kill me.'" "You don't actually think there are assassins in here, do you? I know I thought this was a trap, but look at this place. Arista never could have arranged this. Or do you honestly think others will be able to slip in the same cliff door we entered through?" "What I think is that there is no reason to take unnecessary chances."
"Unnecessary chances? Are you serious? You don't consider crossing a slick, narrow bridge over a gorge, which is who knows how deep, a risk? Assassins are the least of our worries."
"Are you always this much trouble to those guarding you?" Ulrich's only response was a look of disdain. The archway led to a narrow, tunneled corridor, which eventually opened into a large, round room. Arranged like an amphitheatre, the gallery contained descending stairs and stone benches set in rings, each lower than the one before it, which focused all attention on the recessed centre of the room. At the bottom of the steps was a balcony, and 20 feet below it lay a circular stage. Once they descended the stairs, Hadrian could see the stage was bare, except for a single chair and the man who sat upon it. An intense beam of white light illuminated the seated figure from high above. He did not appear terribly old, with only the start of grey entering his otherwise dark shoulder-length hair. Dark, brooding eyes gazed out from beneath a prominent forehead. No facial hair marred his high cheekbones, which surprised Hadrian, because the few wizards and magicians he knew about all wore long beards as a mark of their profession. He wore a magnificent robe, the colour of which Hadrian could not quite determine. The garment shimmered somewhere between dark blue and smoky grey, but where it was folded or creased, it looked to be emerald green, or at times even turquoise. The man sat with the robe gathered around him, his hands lost in its folds placed upon his lap. He sat still as a statue, giving no indication he was aware of their presence. "What now?" Ulrich whispered. "You talk to him," Royce replied. The prince looked around thoughtfully.
That man down there can't really be 1,000 years old, can he?
I don't know. In here anything seems possible, Hadrian said.
Myron looked around the room and up toward the unseen ceiling, a pained expression on his face.
That singing, it reminds me of the abbey, of the fire, as if I can hear them again, screaming.
Hadrian gently put a hand on Myron's shoulder.
Ignore it, Royce told the monk, and then turned to glare at Ulric. You have to talk to him. We can't leave until you do. Now go ahead and ask him what you came here to find out.
What do I say? I mean, if he is, you know, really a wizard of the old empire, if he actually served the last emperor, how do I approach him?
Try asking what he's been up to, Hadrian suggested.
That was met by a smirk from Ulric.
No, seriously, look down there. It's just him in a chair. He has no books, no cards, nothing. I nearly went crazy with boredom cooped up in the rose and thorn last winter during a heavy snowfall. How do you suppose he spent 1,000 years just sitting in that chair?
And how do you not go insane, listening to that sound all the time? Myron added.
Okay, I've got something.
Ulric turned to address the wizard.
Excuse me, sir.
The man in the chair slowly raised his head and blinked in response to the bright light from above. He looked weary, his eyes tired.
Sorry to disturb you. I'm Ulric Ez...
I know well who art thee, Ezra Harden interrupted. His tone was relaxed and calm, his voice gentle and soothing. Where be thy sinlister?
My what?
Thy sinlister, Arista.
Oh, my sister.
Sister, the wizard repeated carefully, and sighed, shaking his head.
She's not here.
Why doth not she come? Ulric looked first to Royce, and then to Hadrian.
She asked us to come in her place, Royce responded.
Looking at the thief, the wizard asked, And who art thee?
Me? I'm nobody, Royce replied.
Ezra Harden narrowed his eyes at the thief and raised one eyebrow. Perhaps, perhaps not.
My sister instructed me to come here and speak with you, Ulric said, drawing the wizard's attention back to him. Do you know why?
'Tis I who bade her send thee.
Neat trick, since you're locked in here, Hadrian observed.
Neat? Ezra Harden questioned. Dost thou intend 'twas a clean thing, for I see no filth upon the matter?
The four men responded with looks of confusion.
'Tis not a point upon which to dwell. Arista hath in Habard graced me with her presence fair for a year and more, though difficult be it to determine the passage of the sun within this darkened hole. A student of the art she fancies herself, but schools for wizards thy world abides not. A desert of want drove her to seek my counsel. She bade me teach those skills now long forgotten. Within these walls am I locked, as time skips across fingertips untethered, with naught but the sound of mine own voice to pose comfort. So did I acquiesce for pity's sake. Tidings of the new world thy princess did provide. In return, I imparted gifts upon her. Gifts of knowledge.
Knowledge? Ulric asked, concerned. What kind of knowledge?
Trifles. Be not long ago thy father suffered ill. A henth bylin did I instruct her to create.
They all looked at him, puzzled.
Ezra Harden's gaze left them. He appeared to search for something.
By another name, did she fix it? 'Twas...
His face strained with concentration until at last he scowled and shook his head.
A healing potion?
Myron asked. The wizard eyed the monk carefully.
Indeed.
You taught her to make a potion to give to my father?
Frightening, yes, to have such a devil as I administering potions to thy king. Yet no poison did I render, nor death impart.
Like-minded was she, and did challenge me thus. So each did we drink from the same cup to prove it free of mischief. No horns did we grow, nor deaths impart, but thy liege fared well upon the taking.
That doesn't explain why Arista sent me here.
Death upon thy house hast come.
How do you know that?
Yes,
my father was murdered,
Ulrich said.
The wizard sighed and nodded. I forewarned a curse so dreadful hung upon thy family's fate, but ear thy sister hast not.
Still, I beckoned her to send thee forth should death imperil or accident belay the ruling house of Essendon.
Ezra Harden looked deliberately at Hadrian, Royce, and then Myron.
Innocence accused, thy fellows be.
For I counselled her thus. Trustworthy only are those assigned blame for deeds most foul.
So, do you know who killed my father?
A name I have not, nor clairvoyant am I. Yet clear is the bow from which the arrow flew. Thy father died by the hand of man in league with the adversary that holds me fast.
The Nephron Church,
Myron muttered softly, yet still the wizard heard, and his eyes narrowed once more at the monk.
Why would the Church of Nephron wish to kill my father?
For deaf and blind be the passions of men once scent is sniffed.
Watchful are they, and listen well these walls, for while act benign and intent charitable, my jailers believed my hand did point the way, and thy father the heir of Navron be.
Wait a minute, Ulrich interrupted. The church doesn't want to murder the heir. Their whole existence revolves around restoring him to the throne and creating the new imperial era.
1,000 years renders not truth from lie. Death called for, and death sought for the blood of God. 'Tis reason true that sealed away am I.
And why is that?
Alone, muzzled, and buried deep, chained to a stone-lined grave I am kept. For witness to this counterfeit of the truth I stand, the only lamp in a ceaseless night. The church, that bastion of faith, the wicked serpent whose fangs did wrench the life from the emperor and his family, all save one. Should heir be found, evidence shall I hold, and such proof against slander wield. For 'tis I who fought to save our lord.
The way we heard the story, you were the one who killed the imperial family and are responsible for the destruction of the entire empire,
Hadrian said.
From whence did such tale arise? From the adder tongue of mitred serpents? Dost thou truly believe such power resides in one man?
What makes you think they killed the emperor? Ulrich inquired.
'Tis not a question nor guess. 'Tis no supposition I extol, but memory. As clear as yesterday. I know. 'Twas there, and 'twas I who delivered the emperor's only son from death at pious hands.
So you're telling us that you lived at the time of the emperor,
"You expect us to believe that you are over 900 years old?" Royce asked.
"Thou speak of doubt, but none have I." A question posed and a question answered.
"That's just an answer, like this is just a prison," Royce countered.
"I still don't understand what all this has to do with my father. Why would the church kill him?"
"Kept alive by powers of enchantment am I, for I alone the heir can find. These serpents watch, and hope to see me slip and cast into their hands the fruit of Navron. An interest upon him did I show? By kindness did I suggest deference toward thy father? And in haste to rid burdened souls of traceable guilt, did the church slay thy king? More's the blood to stain red hands. Never did I expect, but wonder nonetheless at their vicious thirst. So to Arista did I warn of perils and portents dark."
"And that's why you wanted me brought here? To explain this to me? To make me understand?"
"Nay. I did send summons but for a path of another course."
"And what is that?"
The wizard looked up at them, his expression revealing a hint of amusement.
"Escape."
No one said anything. Myron took the moment to sit down on the stone bench behind him and whisper to Hadrian,
"You are right. Life outside the abbey is much more exciting than books."
"You want us to help you escape?" Royce asked incredulously.
He held out his hands and looked around the black stone fortress.
"From here? 'Tis necessary."
"'Tis also impossible. I've gotten out of a number of difficult situations in my time, but nothing like this."
"And thou art aware of little. Measures thou see art but trifles. Walls, guards, and the abyss stand least among the gauntlet. Lo, what works of magic ensnare me. Magical locks claim all the doors here. As smoke and dream they vanish with passage. The bridge into the bargain, for it hath withered hence. Look, and ye will find it so. 'Tis gone."
Royce raised an eyebrow skeptically.
"Ulric, I need your ring."
The prince handed it to the thief, who climbed the steps and disappeared into the tunnel. He returned a few minutes later and gave the ring back to Ulric. A slight nod of his head confirmed what Hadrian already suspected. Hadrian turned his attention back to the wizard, and Ezra Hardin continued.
"More to the misery, and serious still, art the runes that line these prison walls. Magic defends this offending stone, which neither force of blow nor wit of wizardry shall let slip the portal of this hateful cage. 'Tis what thou hear as twisted euphony, this mournful wailing that plagues the ear. Within this spellbound grasp of symbols, no new conjuration may manifest. Moreover, what more to trip hope and plague mind, but that time itself lies captive in this hateful grip, suspended thus, immobile? 'Tis why the years but wave in passing as they flee, never touching this cave, nor inhabitants therein. In joining me, thou hast not aged one wink, nor shall thou hunger nor thirst, lest no more than when thou entered. Shocking, oh, this feat, this masterwork of mountainous achievement built for one soul."
"Huh?" Ulric asked. "He says that no magic can be performed in here and time does not pass,"
Myron explained.
"I don't believe that," Ulric challenged.
"Put hand to thy breast and search for the meter of thy heart." Myron inched his fingers across his chest and let out a tiny squeak.
"And with all these obstacles, you expect us to help you escape?" Hadrian said.
The wizard replied with an impish grin. "Although I'm dying to ask how," Royce said, "I'm even more compelled to ask why. If they went through this much effort to seal you in here, it seems to me they might have had a good reason. You've told us what we came to hear. We're done. So why would we be foolish enough to try and help you escape?"
"Little choice exists for the choosing."
"We have a great many choices," Ulrich countered bravely. "I'm the king, and rule here. It's you who is powerless."
"Oh, 'tis not I that bars thy path, O prince. Thou understand rightly. Helpless am I, a prisoner of weakness bound. 'Tis our jailers with whom thou need set thy argument. While every note in our words be measured and writ, I pray thee call out for release and greet the silence sure to follow. Shout and hear the echo run unanswered. Trapped with me by walls or death, they seek to claim thee."
"But if they are listening, they know I'm not the heir,"
Ulrich said, but the courage in his voice had melted away.
"Call out and see which truth prevails."
Ulrich's concern showed on his face, as he looked first to Hadrian and then to Royce.
"He may be right," the thief said quietly.
Concern turned to panic, and the prince began to shout commands for their release. There was no response, no sound of the great door opening, or of approaching protectors to escort them to the exit. Everyone except the wizard looked worried. Ulrich wrung his hands and Myron stood and held onto the rail of the balcony as if letting go would allow the world to spin away from him.
"It was a trap after all," Ulrich said.
He turned to Royce.
"My apologies for doubting your sound paranoia."
"Even I didn't expect this.
Perhaps there's another way out."
Royce took a seat on one of the observation benches and assumed the same contemplative look he had worn when he was trying to determine how to get inside the prison. Everyone remained silent for some time. Finally, Hadrian approached Royce and whispered,
"Okay, buddy, this is where you tell me you have this wonderfully unexpected plan to get us out of here."
"Well, I do have one, but it seems almost as frightening as the alternative."
"What's that?"
"We do what the wizard says."
They looked down at the man casually seated in the chair. His robe looked a slightly different shade of blue now. Hadrian waved the others over and explained Royce's plan.
"Could this be a trick?"
Ulrich asked quietly.
"The clerk did warn us not to do anything he said."
"You mean the nice clerk who took away our bridge and refuses to let us out?" Royce replied.
"I'm not seeing an alternative, but if any of you have another idea, I'm willing to hear it."
"I'd just like to feel my heart again," Myron said, holding his palm to his chest and looking sick. "This is very disturbing. I almost feel like I'm actually dead."
"Your Majesty?"
Ulrich looked up at the thief with a scowl.
"I just want to say, for the record, that as far as royal protectors go, you're not very good."
"It's my first day," Royce replied dryly.
"And already I'm trapped in a timeless prison. I shudder to think what might have happened if you had a whole week."
"Listen, I don't see we have a choice here," Royce told the group. "We either do what the wizard says and hope he can get us out, or we accept an eternity of sitting here listening to this dreadful singing."
The mournful wail of the music was so wretched that Hadrian knew listening to it would eventually drive him mad. He tried to ignore it, but as it did for Myron, it brought him unpleasant memories of places and people. Hadrian saw the disappointment on his father's face when he had left to join the military. He saw the tiger covered in blood, gasping for breath as it slowly died. And he heard of the sound of hundreds chanting the name Galente. He had reached his conclusion. Anything was better than staying there.
Royce stood and returned to the balcony, below which the wizard waited calmly. "I assume if we help you escape, you'll see to it we get out as well."
"Indeed."
"And there's no way to determine if you're telling the truth right now."
The wizard smiled. "Alas, nay."
Royce sighed heavily. "What do we have to do?"
"Precious little. Thy prince, this wayward and recent king, need but recite a bit of poetry."
"Poetry?"
Ulric pushed past Hadrian to join Royce at the balcony.
"What poetry?"
The wizard stood up and kicked his chair to one side to reveal 4 stanzas of text crudely scratched into the floor.
"'Tis amazing what beauty time may grant," the wizard said with obvious pride. "Speak, and it wilt be so." Hadrian silently read the lines brightly illuminated by the beam of the overhead light.
"As lord of this realm and keeper of keys, a decree was made, and councilman seized. Unjustly, I say, and the time 'tis nigh to open the gate and let his soul fly. By virtue of gift granted to me, by rightful birth, the sovereign I be. Hereby I proclaim this royal decree, Ezra Harden, the wizard, this moment is free."
"How is that possible?" Ulric asked. "You said spells don't work here."
"Indeed, and thou art no spell caster. Thou art but granting freedom as the law allows the rightful ruler of this land. Laws of control laid down before the birth of Melengar. Laws built on assumptions false concerning the longevity of power and who might, in due course of time, wield it. At this moment, in this place, 'tis thee. Thou art the rightful and undisputed ruler of this land, and as such, the locks are to thine to open. For here latch and bolt be forged with words of enchantment, words that in time hath changed their meaning. This jail, raised upon ground once claimed by imperial might, in absence of emperor slain, did bend knee alone to the Nephron Church patriarch. Now within these walls, never a grain of sand did drop to mark the passage of time, but without thunder of war did rumble. Armies marched and lands divided, the empire lost to warlord's whim. Then, through bloody strife did these hills birth Melengar, realm sovereign under lordly king. What privilege once reserved alone only for a mitred head hast now fallen to thee. To thee, good king of Melengar, who has the power to right wrong so long amid. 9 centuries of dust hast buried wit, dear king, for these jailers hath forgotten how to read their own runes. In the distance, Hadrian heard the grinding of stone on stone. Outside the cell, the great door was opening. "Speak those words, my lord, and thou will end 900 years of wrongful imprisonment."
"How does this help?" Ulric asked. "This place is filled with guards. How does this get us out?"
The wizard smiled a great grin. "Thy words will cast aside the barrier enchantment and allow me the freedom to use the art once more."
"You'll cast a spell. You'll disappear."
Footsteps thundered on the bridge, which had apparently reappeared. Hadrian ran up the gallery stairs to look down the tunnel.
"We have guards coming,
and they don't look happy.
If you're going to do this, you'd better make it fast, Royce told Ulrich.
They have swords drawn, Adrian shouted. Never a good sign.
Ulrich glared down at the wizard.
I want your word, you won't leave us.
Gladly given, my lord. The wizard inclined his head respectfully.
This better work, Ulrich muttered, and began reading aloud the words on the floor below.
Royce raced to join Hadrian as he positioned himself at the mouth of the tunnel. Hadrian planned to use its confined space to limit the advantage of the guard's numbers and planted his feet, while Royce took up position slightly behind him. In unison, they drew their weapons, preparing for the impending onslaught. At least 20 men stormed the gallery. Hadrian could see their eyes and recognized what burned there. He had fought numerous battles, and he knew the many faces of combat. He had seen fear, recklessness, hatred, even madness. What came at him now was rage. Blind, intense rage.
Hadrian studied the lead man, estimating his footfalls to determine which leg his weight would land on when he came within striking range. He did the same with the man behind him. Calculating his attack, he raised his swords, but the prison guards stopped. Hadrian waited with his sword still poised, yet the guards did not advance.
"Let us away," he heard Ezra Hardin say from behind.
Hadrian whirled around and discovered the wizard was no longer on the stage below. Instead, he moved casually past Hadrian, navigating around the stationary guards.
"Come, come," Ezra Hardin called.
Without a word, the group hurried after the wizard. He led them through the tunnel and across the newly extended bridge. The prison was oddly silent, and it was only then that Hadrian realized the music had stopped. The only remaining sound was their footfalls against the hard stone floor. "Be at ease, for peril's past, but tarry not and follow well," Ezra Hardin told them reassuringly. They did as instructed, and no one said a word. To pass the clerk, who stood peering through the great door, they needed to come within inches of his anxiety-riddled face. As Hadrian attempted to slip by without bumping him, he saw the man's eye move. Hadrian stiffened.
"Can they see or hear us?"
"Nay, a ghostly breath is all thee be, a chill and swirl of air to their percept." The wizard led them without hesitation, making turns, crossing bridges, and climbing stairs with total confidence.
"Maybe we're dead,"
Myron whispered, glaring at each frozen guard as he passed.
"Maybe we're all dead now. Maybe we're ghosts."
Hadrian thought Myron might be onto something. Everything was so oddly still, so empty. The fluid movement of the wizard and his billowing robe, which now emitted a soft, silvery light far brighter than any lantern or torch, only heightened the surreal atmosphere.
"I don't understand. How is this possible?"
Ulrich asked, stepping around a pair of black-suited guards who watched the third bridge. He waved his hand before the face of one of them, who didn't respond.
"Is this your doing?"
"'Tis the Ithanol."
"Huh?"
"A magic box. Power to alter time eludes the grasp of man, for too vast be the scope and too great the field. Yet enclose the space, confine the effect, and tame the wild world within. Upon these walls my colleagues of old wove enchantments complex. Designed to affect magic and time, I had but to ever so slightly adjust a fibre or two within the weave, to throw us out of phase."
"So, the guards can't see us, but that doesn't explain why they're just standing there," Hadrian said. "We disappeared, and you're free. Why are they not searching? Shouldn't they be locking doors to trap us?"
"Within these walls, locked are the sands of time, for all but us."
"You turned it
inside out, Myron exclaimed.
Ezra Harden looked with an appraising eye over his shoulder at the monk. "'Tis thrice thou hast impressed me. What did thou say thy name was?"
"He didn't," Royce answered for him.
"Thou dost not trust people easily, my black-hooded friend. 'Tis quite wise. Careful should be the dealings with the wise and wizards."
Ezra Harden winked at the thief.
"What does he mean by turning it inside out?" Ulrich asked. "So, time has stopped for them while we are free?"
"Indeed. Though time still moves, 'tis very slowly paced. Unaware will they remain sealed, in an instant lost."
"I'm starting to see now why they were afraid of you," Ulrich said.
900 years did I spend imprisoned for saving the son of a man we all swore our lives to serve and protect. Exceedingly kind is the reward I bestow, for there art worse moments in which, for all eternity, to be trapped."
They reached the great stair that led to the main entrance corridor, and began the long, exhausting climb up the stone steps.
"How did you stay sane?" Hadrian asked. "Or did time slip by in an instant like it is for them?"
"Slip it did, but not so fast when measured in centuries. Each day a battle did I fight. Patience is a skill learned as a practitioner of the art, yet times there were that... well, who can say what it means to be sane?"
When they approached the Hall of Faces, Ezra Harden looked down its length and paused. Hadrian noticed the wizard stiffen.
"What is it?" he asked.
"Those faces, frozen thus, art the workers who built this jail. Came I to this place during the final walling. Tented city did wreathe the lake. Hundreds of artisans with families came to the call to do their part for their fallen emperor. Such was the character of his imperial majesty. They all mourned his passing, and few in the vast and varied empire would not gladly give their lives for him. Labelled the betrayer, I beheld hatred in their eyes. Proud were they to be the builders of my tomb."
The wizard's gaze moved from face to face.
"I recognize some. The stonecutters, sculptors, cooks and wives. The church, for fear of secrets slipped from lips innocent, sealed them so. All before thee, ensnared by a lie."
"How many dead?
How much lost to hide one secret, which even a millennium hast not erased?"
"There's no door down there," Ulrich warned the wizard.
Ezra Harden looked up at Ulrich as if awoken from a dream.
"Be not a fool.
Thou didst enter through it," he said, and promptly led them down the corridor at a brisk walk.
"Thou wert merely out of phase with it." Here, in the darkest segment of the prison, Ezra Harden's robe grew brighter still, and he looked like a giant firefly.
In time, they came to a solid stone wall, and without hesitation or pause, Ezra Harden walked through it. The rest quickly followed.
The bright sunlight of a lovely, clear autumn morning nearly blinded them the moment they passed through the barrier. Blue sky and the cool, fresh air were a welcome change. Hadrian took a deep breath and reveled in the scent of grass and fallen leaves, a smell he hadn't even noticed prior to entering the prison.
"That's strange. It should be night-time and raining, I would think. We couldn't have been in there more than a few hours. Could we?"
Ezra Harden shrugged and threw his head back to face the sun. He stood and took long, deep breaths of air, sighing contentedly with each exhale.
"Unexpected be the wages of altering time.
What morrow be it, 'tis better to ask? This day, the next, or one after? 'Tis possible tens or hundreds did fly past. The wizard appeared amused at the shock on their faces. Worry not, 'tis likely only hours hast thee skipped.
That's rather unnerving, Ulric said, losing time like that.
Verily, for 900 years have I lost. Everyone I knew is dead. The empire is gone, and who knows in what state the world is left. Should what thy sister reports prove true, much hath changed in the world.
By the way, Royce mentioned, no one uses the words tis or hath any more, and certainly not thou, thy, or verily.
The wizard considered this a moment, then nodded. In my day, classes oft did speak different in forms of speech. Assumed I did that ye were of a lower station, or, in the case of the king, poorly educated.
Ulric glared. It's you who sound strange, not us.
Indeed. Then I shall need to speak as all of you do, even though it is crude and backward.
Hadrian, Royce, and Myron began the task of saddling the horses which remained standing where they had left them. Myron smiled, obviously happy to be with the animals once again. He petted them while eagerly asking how to tie a cinch strap.
"We don't have an extra horse, and Hadrian is already riding double," Ulric explained.
He glanced at Royce, who showed no indication of volunteering.
"Ezra Harden will have to ride with me, I suppose."
"Unnecessary will that be, for my own way I shall go."
"Oh, no, you're not. You're coming back with me. I have a great deal to speak with you about. You were an advisor to the Emperor, and are obviously very gifted and knowledgeable. I have great need for someone such as you. You'll be my royal counselor."
"Nay, twill..." He sighed, then continued, "No, it will come as a shock to you, but I did not escape to help with your little problems. Matters more pressing I must attend to, and too long from them have I been."
The prince appeared taken aback.
"What matters could you possibly have after 900 years? After all, it's not as if you have to get home to tend to your livestock. If it's a matter of compensation, you'll be well paid and live in as much luxury as I can afford. And if you are thinking you can make more elsewhere, only Ethelred of Warwick is likely to offer as much, and trust me, you don't want to work for the likes of him. He's a dogmatic imperialist and a loyal church supporter."
"I do not seek compensation."
"No? Look at you. You have nothing. No food, no place to sleep. I think you should consider your situation a bit more before refusing me. Besides, gratitude alone should compel you to help me."
"Gratitude? Has the meaning of this word changed as well? In my day, this meant to show appreciation for a favor."
"And it still does. I saved you. I released you from that place."
Ezra Harden raised an eyebrow. "Didst thou help me escape as favor to me?" "I think not."
You freed me to save yourself. I owe you nothing, and if I did, I repaid you when I brought you out. But the whole reason I came here was to gain your assistance. I'm inheriting a throne handed down by blood. Thieves abducted and dragged me across the kingdom in my first few days as king. I still don't know who killed my father or how to find them. I'm in great need of help. You must know hundreds of things the greatest minds of today have never known.
Thousands at least, but I am still not going with you. You have a kingdom to secure. My path lies elsewhere.
Ulrich's face grew red with frustration.
I insist you return with me and become my adviser. I can't just let you wander off. Who knows what kind of trouble you could cause? You're dangerous.
Yes, indeed, dear prince, the wizard said, and his tone grew serious. So allow me to grant thee a bit of free counsel. Use not the word insist with regards to me. Thou hast but only a small spill to contend with. Do not tempt a deluge.
Ulrich stiffened. How long before the church starts hunting you? Royce asked casually.
What dost... The wizard sighed. What do you mean?
You lock things up nicely in the prison, so no one will know you escaped. Of course, if we were to return and start bragging about how we broke you out, that might start inquiries, Hadrian said.
The wizard leveled his gaze at him. Is it a threat you make?
Why would I do that? As you already know, I have nothing to do with this. Not to mention it would be pretty stupid of me to threaten a wizard. The thing is, though, the king here, he's not as bright as I am. He very well might get drunk and tell stories at the first tavern he arrives at, as nobles often do.
Ezra Harden glanced at Ulrich, whose red face now turned pale.
Fact is, we came all this way to find out who killed Ulrich's father, and we really don't know much more than we did before we set out.
Ezra Harden chuckled softly. Very well. Prithee impart how 'tis... It is. Your father died.
He was stabbed with a knife, Ulrich explained.
What kind of knife?
A common rondel military dagger.
Ulrich held his hands about a foot apart.
About this long. It had a flat blade and a round pommel.
Ezra Harden nodded.
Where was he stabbed?
In his private chapel.
Where physically?
Oh, in the back, upper left, I think.
Were there any windows or other doors in the chapel?
None.
Who found the body?
These two.
Ulrich pointed at Royce and Hadrian.
The wizard smiled and shook his head. Nay, besides them, who announced the death of the king? Who raised the alarm?
That would be Captain Wylan, my master at arms. He was on the scene very quickly and apprehended them.
Hadrian thought about the night King Amrath had been killed.
No, that's not right. There was a dwarf there. He must have come around the corner of the hallway just as we left the room. He probably saw the king's body lying on the floor of the chapel and shouted. Right after he yelled, the soldiers came, and surprisingly fast, I might add.
That was just Magnus, Ulrich said. He's been doing stonework about the castle for months.
Didst the... you... see this dwarf approach from the corridor? The wizard asked.
No,
Hadrian replied, and Royce confirmed that with a shake of his head.
And when you entered the chapel from the doorway, was the body of the king visible?
Hadrian and Royce shook their heads.
That solves it, then,
the wizard said, as if everything was perfectly clear.
The party stared back at him in confusion.
Ezra Harden sighed.
The dwarf killed Amrath.
That's not possible, Ulrich said, challenging him. My father was a big man, and the dagger thrust was downward. A dwarf couldn't possibly have stabbed him in the upper back.
Your father was in his chapel, as any pious king, kneeling with head bowed. The dwarf killed him as he prayed.
But the door was locked when we entered, Hadrian said, and there was no one in the room besides the king.
No one you could see. Did the chapel have an altar with a cabinet?
Yes, it did.
They did a millennium ago as well. Religion changes slowly. The cabinet was likely too small for a man, but could easily accommodate a dwarf. After he killed the king, he locked the door and waited for you to find the body. Ezra Harden paused. That cannot be right. You too? He rolled his eyes and shook his head. If this has been done to language, I fear to know the fate of all else. With door locked, a night guard or cleaning steward would not find the body prematurely. Only a skilled thief would be able to enter, which I assume at least one of you is. He looked directly at Royce as he said the last part. After you left, the dwarf crept out, opened the door, and sounded the alarm.
So, the dwarf is an agent of the church?
No. The wizard sighed with a look of frustration. Not a dwarf alive who would carry a common dagger. The traditions of dwarves change even slower than religion. Given the dagger he was by the one who hired him. Find that person, and you will find the true killer. Stunned, everyone looked at the wizard.
That's incredible,
Ulric said. Nay, not so difficult to determine. The wizard inclined his head toward the cliff. Escape was hard. Speaking as you do is hard. Determining the murder of King Amrath was soft?
Soft? Hadrian asked. You mean easy.
Howbeit that easy forms the opposite of hard, since this makes not. Hadrian shrugged.
And yet it is.
Ezra Harden looked frustrated. Alas, now this is as much assistance as I shall lend in this matter. Therefore, I will be on my way. As I have said, I have affairs to attend. My help was sufficient to prevent any loose tongues.
You have my hand on it, Ulric said, reaching out.
The wizard looked down at Ulric's open palm and smiled. Thy word is enough. He turned away and, without so much as a parting gesture, began walking down the slope.
You're going to walk? You know, it's a long way to anywhere from here,
Hadrian yelled after him. I am looking forward to the trip, the wizard replied without glancing back. Following the ancient road, he rounded the corner and slipped out of sight. The remaining party members mounted their horses. Myron seemed more comfortable with animals now, and climbed confidently into his seat behind Hadrian. He even neglected to hold on until they began down the ravine, back in the direction from which they had come. Hadrian expected they would pass Ezra Harden on the way down, but they reached the bottom of the ravine without seeing him.
"Not your run-of-the-mill fellow, is he?"
Hadrian asked. He was continuing to look around for any signs of the wizard. "The way he was able to get out of that place makes me wonder exactly what we did here today by letting him out," Royce said. "No wonder the Emperor was so successful." Ulric frowned and knotted the ends of his reins.
"Although I can tell you it didn't come without aggravation. You know, I don't extend my hand often, but when I do, I expect it to be accepted. I found his reaction quite insulting."
"I'm not sure he was being rude by not shaking your hand. I think it's just because he couldn't," Myron told them.
"Shake your hand, that is."
"Why not?"
"In the accumulated letters of Dialean, they told a bit about Ezra Harden's incarceration. The church had both of his hands cut off in order to limit his ability to cast spells."
"Oh," Ulric said. "Why do I get the impression this Dialean fellow didn't die a natural death?" Hadrian asked.
"He's probably one of those faces in the hallway." Royce spurred his horse down the slope. Chapter 6 Revelations by Moonlight.
I heard you were looking for me, Uncle.
Princess Arista swept into his office. She was followed by her bodyguard, Hilfred, who dutifully waited by the door. Still dressing in clothing, mourning her father's death, she wore an elegant black gown with a silver bodice. Standing straight and tall with her head held high, she maintained her regal air. The Archduke Percy Braga rose as she entered.
"Yes, I have some questions for you."
He resumed his seat behind the desk. Her uncle was dressed in black as well. His doublet, cape, and cap were dark velvet, causing his gold chain of office to stand out more than usual. His eyes looked weary from lack of sleep, and a thickening growth of stubble shadowed his face.
"Do you now?" she said, glaring at him. "Since when does the Lord Chancellor summon the acting queen to answer his questions?"
Percy raised his eyes to meet hers.
"There is no proof your brother is dead, Arista. You are not queen yet."
"No proof?" She walked over to Braga's chart table, where maps of the kingdom lay scattered everywhere. They were littered with flags marking where patrols, garrisons, and companies were deployed. She picked up the soiled robe she saw there. It bore the Essendon falcon crest. Poking her fingers through the holes cut in the back, she threw it on his desk.
"What do you call this?"
"A robe," the Archduke responded curtly.
"This is my brother's, and these holes look as though a dagger or arrow would fit through them nicely. Those two men who murdered my father killed Ulrich as well. They dumped his body in the river. My brother is dead, Braga. The only reason I have not already ordered my coronation is that I'm observing the appropriate mourning period. That time will soon be over, so you should mind how you speak to me, Uncle, lest I forget we are family."
"Until I have his body, Arista, I must consider your brother alive. As such, he is still the rightful ruler, and I'll continue to do everything in my power to find him regardless of your interference."
"I owe that much to your father, who entrusted me with this position."
"In case you haven't noticed, my father is dead. You should pay more attention to the living, or you won't be the Lord Chancellor of Melengar for long."
Braga started to say something and then stopped to take a calming breath.
"Will you answer my questions or not?"
"Go ahead and ask. I'll decide after I hear them."
She casually walked back to the chart table and sat on it. She crossed her long legs at the ankles and absently studied her fingernails.
"Captain Wylan reports that he has completed his interviews with the dungeon staff."
Braga got up and moved from behind his desk to face Arista. In his hand, he held a parchment, which he glanced at for reference.
"He indicates you visited the prisoners after your brother and I left them. He says you brought two monks with you, who were later found gagged and hanging in place of the prisoners. Is that true?"
"Yes," she replied without embellishment.
The Archduke continued to stare at her, the silence growing between them. "I'm a superstitious woman by nature, and I wanted to be certain they had last rites so their ghosts didn't remain after their execution."
"There is a report you ordered the prisoners unchained."
Braga took another step closer to her. "The monks told me the prisoners needed to kneel. I saw no danger in it. They were in a cell with an army of guards just outside."
"They also reported you entered with the monks and had the door closed behind you."
The Archduke took another step. He was now uncomfortably close, studying her manners and expression.
"Did they also mention I left before the monks did? Or that I wasn't there when the brutes grabbed them? Arista pushed off